welcome back to another week of the Geek Whisperers. I'm John Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm Matt Brender.
The podcast where we bring enterprise IT and talk to it using soothing, cooling voices and make it gentle petting motions until it falls asleep in our hand. We do community management and social media, and we do it for enterprise IT technologists. We actually have a really good show for you this week. I have a longtime friend of mine and a colleague of all of ours, Calvin Zito, who is HP storage guy on Twitter. And I'd like to welcome you to the show today. Welcome, Calvin.
Hey, glad to be here, guys.
Calvin, thanks for coming on the show. As your Twitter name might suggest, you do work for HP and HP's storage division. And you are actually have a fairly unique role in that you are one of the few people I know at HP or elsewhere that actually is in a business unit, but is in a purely social media evangelist role. And we've talked to a number of different evangelists on this podcast. I think one of the things that is interesting about the position right now is that it is very individual in every company and every person. So everybody has a slightly different take on what that word evangelist means. And I'm not even sure you consider yourself an evangelist. So well, welcome to the show. And why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us what you do?
Yeah, thanks. Well, I actually do consider myself an evangelist. As you said, I'm Calvin Zito. Gosh, you guys are going to just get the idea that I'm just an old fart right now, but I just celebrated 30 years with HP.
Congrats.
Which just is amazing to me if you think about the history of HP in the recent past. But yeah, so I've been in HP for 30 years. I spent about 7 or 8 years in the field as an engineer, moved to a marketing role in storage, and about 6 or 7 years ago got really interested in social media and thought that that was something that really needed some more focus and we needed to pay more attention to. And so I kind of took social media on as a nights and weekends job and was actually one of the first people in HP to get serious about it. And management saw some success and started trying to create, you know, more of a social media focus around HP. So basically, in some ways, I had a lot to do with HP starting to actually get into using social media as a tactic in the tool belt.
And I have to jump in here just to kind of level set for our listeners. When did that happen? Did you feel like you were an early adopter? Was it Wild West? Can you talk us through sort of the timeline for that?
I tell people I was an early adopter, but that was an early adopter in HP time. And, you know, if you worked at a big corporation, you know, sometimes, you know, things move a little slow at big corporations. So for me, I think it was about 6 years ago. If I go back and look on the blog, I think when I actually started seeing my name on it, it was about 6 years ago.
Well, that's pretty good. Was that at that time? I mean, that's 2008-ish, 7-8-ish, Twitter, Facebook, just starting then. I was at VMware before then, but I was the blogger guy before then. Was it blogs or social media or all of them?
It was pretty much initially focused on social media, or I'm sorry, on blogs, because my initial impression of Twitter is nobody cares what I want for lunch or what I'm going to go eat for lunch. And it, you know, took to listening to somebody smarter than me at the time to realize, you know, there's a big opportunity here that I'm missing. And then got on Twitter, I think about 4.5, 5 years ago. So, it started out really the way I started out blogging was actually kind of funny, is that we had a VP in HP storage that had started to blog, actually got a lot of attention on in TechTarget, which is a storage magazine. At the time, it was also a printed magazine, but also online. And they wrote a story about him blogging and got a lot of attention. Unfortunately, he only wrote 2 blog posts over the course of about 9 months. And HP blogging police said, you know, we're going to take this blog away. And I kind of stepped in and said, no, I see some competitors who have 9 VPs blogging and we have nobody and we can't just take this away. So I kind of took it on and said, I'm going to make it work. And that's basically how I got into it.
I want a sidebar here. Amy, how does one successfully tweet what they had for lunch?
Eat bacon and Instagram it.
Well, it's all about the filter in Instagram. Amy taught me that day one.
Amy has
And the angle.
Yeah, Amy has a very successfully bacon tweeting practice.
I've seen the bacon tweets from Amy, and it maybe at some point, if you open this up for questions from me, I certainly want to understand the fascination with bacon because I don't get it. Is it the grease? Is it the meat? I don't get it.
That's another podcast altogether.
I think it's just the momentum. So, Calvin, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on here this week was that you guys at HP were actually one of the first organizations to pull together bloggers into a blogger briefing day in our space. And by that, I mean there have been blogger junkets for years. I don't know at what level of kind of bribery they did, but you know, you hear stories about mommy bloggers getting flown everywhere, and you know, the various ways that corporations would interact with bloggers in a kind of junket type fashion. But what I thought was brilliant, and I'm not even sure what year it was, that you guys pulled together a group of bloggers who were all active at the time. So we actually must have had an active blogosphere. You pulled them together, flew them out, briefed them for a couple of days, and then sent them off, and they successfully kind of had briefed them and taught them about what your technology was doing. And that actually sparked a whole series of events, which I connect directly to things like Tech Field Day and what Stephen Foskett's organization is doing and what many other companies are doing in our space. You kind of built a model for that. So first of all, kudos.
Well, thanks. I can't actually take a lot of credit for the concept. We were actually working with an agency, and in fact, we still work with an agency called Ivy Worldwide, who kind of had presented this idea to us of doing it. And they were actually a bunch of ex-PR people, a few of them that had been in the social media space and kind of had developed a concept of doing something like this. Now, whether it was their invention or not, I don't know. I mean, does anybody know who did the first press conference? I kind of doubt it.
I don't know, Calvin, but you are blowing my mind by bringing up PR and agencies in a positive tone. I think it just kind of shows that this podcast of ours is coming back to haunt us. We talked to PR and it, yeah, no.
Well, there are great smart principles. Ones. Come on.
Yeah, but don't be confused that I'm kind of like all into the PR side of things, because frankly, I've done everything I can to keep social media and PR separated, because the last thing I want anybody to believe is that, you know, social media is a totally PR-driven activity.
Can you tell us a little bit about the genesis of the project, though, and how did you sell it internally, and what were you guys trying to get out of it?
You know, again, it was – I'm kind of trying to think of the time frame. I think probably like September 2009. So we're talking, you know, what 3.5 years ago. So I'd already been blogging for a couple of years at that point and had started to make some connections on Twitter. You know, a few people that you guys probably all know, you know, Rich Brambley, who at the time was doing a lot of blogging on his blog. You know, Stephen Foskett had his blog. You mentioned him with Tech Field Day, Greg Nierman, Devang Panjagar, who we don't see a whole lot of anymore in the social media space, Nigel Poulton, Simon Seagrave. I mean, all these guys were already out there blogging. And it came to me that, you know, here's a concept of something you guys might consider trying on the storage side to, you know, get some more visibility of what you're doing. So it didn't start with picking those people to come. I mean, it was, you know, it started with, here's a concept. What you can do is do these events where you can bring people in. At the heart of it, I designed the content, and I'm trying to remember actually what that first one was, but we, you know, we had I think a half day of briefings. I did a half day of hands-on labs in the afternoon so people could get their hands on some of the technology we were talking about. And I think we did another half day where I think I kind of shared the limelight with a couple of other businesses in HP and said, hey, we're going to have these people here. Do you want to come in and talk? So I think ProLiant team came in and gave them an hour, and another team came in, gave them an hour of the agenda, which, you know, an hour is precious when you're talking about, you only get these guys for a day and a half.
So basically you reached out to some bloggers for and flew them in, all expenses paid, for a day and a half to the storage headquarters to basically tell them what was going on.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you guys had, I think, Chris on a recent show, maybe it was the last one, actually, Chris Wall, and he kind of talked about what he does. And it's very similar, exactly what you described, John. I mean, we basically handled all their travel, put them up in a hotel, you know, kept them fed. One of the guys we had there wanted to make sure we kept them lathered in drinks as well. And, you know, we accommodated that, at least during, you know, after hours activities, not during the day.
Some of those Tech Field Days, I've seen they start drinking early.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. I mean, you know, just as long as you keep it in moderation, one drink per person, so they actually get the content before they're, you know, three sheets to the wind. As I think other people have talked about, we never require anybody write anything. We don't make you sign a contract that you're going to write anything. You know, we bring you. We hope that the content is enough that you're going to be interested. The flip side of that coin to people that are maybe looking at doing this is, you know, one of the things I'm certainly evaluating is as I do this and as we continue to do this is I'm looking at people we've brought. And, you know, there's a couple people that we've brought to an event a couple times, and I look back in hindsight and I go, look, and they've never written anything. And we don't require that they write anything, but, you know, we're spending a lot of money to bring you to an event, you know, something between $5,000 to $8,000, depending on what it costs to, you know, actually pay for you to get into that event. Got to get something out of it in the end, is that's what our objective is. So you can't keep coming to an event and not ever write anything. At the same time, we don't demand that you do.
Yeah, of course, Calvin. And I think that's the delicate balance of influencer engagement these days where, or even, I mean, you've been doing this for more than a few years, that you invest heavily, sometimes pretty heavily up front with no contracts, no necessarily strict expectations. And given that, you always hope for the best. You hope to have a compelling story that inspires them to write. And, you know, future opportunity is based on past performance. I think that's all expected in our social world. So if people drop off, others are looking for that limelight on stage. So, yeah, the crowd keeps gathering as long as opportunities arise, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you think about the crowd gathering, I mean, one of the things that I continually am scanning, and that is to find, you know, the bloggers who are interested and who have influence, who care about storage or technology in general. Again, guys like Chris Wall, who don't necessarily focus on storage, more of a virtualization guy, but he still loves to write about storage. And I'm always looking and scanning for people who may be the next Chris Wall, or you know, you guys can name who the bloggers are in the world that we are in.
We can just say the next unicorn. I mean, we've addressed the unicorn phenomenon
exactly
well enough.
Yeah, and I'm always searching for who the next unicorn is, because frankly, I mean, as I look at that list of the people that came to the first one, three or four of them got hired by you know, other vendors, and we did a second one about a year later, and several of them got hired by vendors. And you know, it's obviously becomes a tough to keep a list of people who are truly independent, who maybe focus on storage, because they tend to get hired up by Matt, your former employer, or you know, some of the new startups that are out there.
Right. Well, there's a natural ebb and flow, and life happens, right? People have babies, people move into new roles, and people just get tired of it, right? I blogged for a couple of years and then I stopped. That's fine. Hey, Calvin, I was curious. How much did your estimation of the different bloggers' reach and size of their audience go into the picks, or not necessarily at the first one, but as this practice has evolved?
You know, I am generally always primarily involved in picking, although Ivy Worldwide has actually brought people to me who I had no clue who they were, and I kind of scratched my head. Why would I want to bring them? An example of somebody like that, John, you know, and I don't know the rest of you know him, you may, just John Obedo. I mean, when John came, the first tech day that he came to, which I think was the first one. In fact, I know it was the first one we did, and I'm kind of scratching my head. It's like, why do we want this guy there? And so, you know, I'm kind of always playing a balance of people who, certainly technology has to be a focus. I definitely look at, you know, what kind of reach you have, but I also look at, you know, maybe you're somebody that's up and coming. And by coming to an event that we do, whether it's a tech day or it's an HP Discover, or we bring you as a guest of VMworld, or you know, whatever the event is, I'm hoping to build you up and help you get a bigger audience so that the next time we do it, hopefully you got a bigger audience. So I kind of look at it as hopefully you have an influence already, but if you don't, maybe we can build you up and turn you into somebody that does have a bigger following because of some of the, hopefully, the attention you got by coming to our event.
It's unicorn ranching.
Exactly. It's you know, it's making unicorn babies is what it is.
Relationship.
Well, I wanted to jump in and say one of the other things I observed since you were saying, Calvin, in some ways you weren't 100% sold when you first started this. I love kind of hearing the journey, because again, I've heard such great things about the days that you're talking about, the blogger briefings that you do, and how seamless that is and what a great experience is for the bloggers. You know, much credit to you for making that a focus, really treating them as citizen analysts, really extracting the value. And I draw a three circle diagram that we can shove up there. I'm always talking about this thing about social media being people, platforms, and content. And hearing you talk, it's so clear how you were completely sold on the people and the content. And in some ways, this concept of the social platforms, you weren't quite so sure that was going to be the way. So I think it's interesting how it's evolved. And I guess I want to point that out to listeners and sort of hear from you a little more on that, about your own personal journey, because you said how long you'd been with HP, which is also way cool, because I think there's such a misunderstanding in our industry that Twitter and social platforms are for 12-year-olds, and they really are only pictures of your breakfast or your lunch.
Yeah, and I mean, I've utterly fallen in love with Twitter. I can't imagine what I would do if something happened and Twitter wasn't there. And it actually was a worry for me for a while before they went public, because I was really kind of concerned about, you know, how do these guys make money and how are they going to stay in business? Because if Twitter goes away, what happens to all my friends that this is how I connect with them? Because I don't know how to get a hold of a lot of these guys. So Twitter became just something to me that it was a natural progression. And I frankly don't get why, I don't want to say older because I don't view myself as being old. I'm young at heart. I've got a ton of energy, and I think I'm, I don't think of myself as being old, but obviously 30 years of working in tech puts me a little older than most people in this industry. But
I call that experience. And I think the thing I really want to highlight here in all seriousness is that...
Sorry, I lost it.
Was that something? Wait a minute. What was that?
Well, I think it's an interesting thing to say that social media is purely a young person's game. I think it's disingenuous because it discounts the kind of the art of marketing that comes with time, experience, and trying different things. So the other point, and the thing I want to commend you for, is again trying these things. So I think sometimes we get pushback, and how do you sell in some of these ideas? Or, you know, they are disregarded as being not having the gravitas or the weight. Yeah, I love that. One of the things about the Geek Whispers, we represent different companies, different times in our career, et cetera. And I think it's a great point, and I want to bring that out, that it is something, like you said, for anybody out there who's like, I can't do this, Calvin is doing it. So
yeah,
we don't want to hear it.
And for me, the journey to get there, there's a little bit of an interesting journey here, in that I was my job when I started doing this is, oh my gosh, hopefully you guys don't put me in the same category as a PR guy, but my job was a Marcom manager. So I was managing the entire Marcom mix, from collateral to AR to PR to what we did on the web. And I was managing all that. And I had a pretty decent budget, but I at the time, some organizational detail, I wasn't actually sitting in storage. It was almost kind of like I was at an agency at a corporate level doing things exclusively for storage. And I had a pretty decent budget. I mean, it was, you know, somewhere between $300,000-$400,000 a quarter. And one day they woke up and said, you know what, we don't want to give this money to the centralized group. We want it ourselves so we can decide how to spend it. And I went from having, you know, $400,000 to nothing. And I suddenly was faced with a conundrum of, how do I show value to this organization when I got no budget? And that was a big part of what drove me to do social media, because it was pretty easy and easy to create, you know, awareness without having to spend a bunch of money with agencies or analysts or other people to do the work for me. So I was kind of forced into this to a degree to survive some things that were happening at the time.
And now, just a short, you know, six years later, the agencies and the platforms like Facebook have figured out a way to take the money from us again.
Yes, exactly. And I now, you know, I don't have a regular budget that is, you know, a check that I know I'm going to get every quarter to spend. But I definitely go and get budget from my management to do some of the things that we do. And like, you know, paying to bring bloggers to an event, because it does cost money to get on an airplane and put them in nice hotels and that kind of thing.
Was this a common conversation that all of us, I think, have is we'll end up meeting with a group and they're like, yeah, I want to do this social media stuff. And you say, hey, wait, slow down. What's your business objective? Let's start there, and then let's rewind and let's take the conversation from there. Was this a hard sell for you inside HP? Are these things over time? Have people accepted the price of working with bloggers and all this activity that's not directly sales related?
Yeah, you know, there's still pockets of resistance, and I'm sure you guys see this all the time, where you still got to go justify to somebody why what you're doing matters. And why it's worth spending a little bit of budget on, instead of throwing it into a demand gen campaign that somebody can, you know, go and try and you know, sell something through a demand gen lead. So that challenge still exists, and it was challenging. I actually remember, maybe not a management discussion, but with a product manager who I was trying to convince to help me do a blog post for his product, And his answer to me was, look, my customer is a C-level, and he gets on an airplane and he reads a data sheet. He doesn't use social media. He doesn't care about social media. He doesn't even use social media. About a year later, he was completely transformed because he kind of got it that, you know, people are going out on Google and doing Google searches. And, you know, I saw some data the other day that says customers today are 70% through their buying cycle before they even contact a vendor.
Yep. So yeah, we've been circulating that statistic internally too. It's pretty meaningful for those of us doing influence marketing.
Exactly. And you know, if you put all your money in creating data sheets and content that's on your corporate website, and that's what you're relying on to, you know, get customers to come to your door and want to know more, then you've lost the deal. You're not gonna win that battle. And so there's still pockets of resistance, I find, but I think there's more and more people are getting it. What I'm seeing more of, and I'm curious if you guys are seeing this, is that because marketing budgets are under strain, you know, what there's a big push for is to figure out now, how do you use social media to connect customers with, well, let's just use the word lead gen. Mm-hmm. And I'm continually, I won't say fighting that, because I don't want to come off as though I'm kind of...
You know, we're not anti-business. We're all on the same team.
No, we're all trying to make money for our business, no matter how big or small it is.
But what I don't want to come off of is that I'm already an HP storage shill. I mean that in the most affectionate way. I mean, everybody knows that's what I am. If you know me on Twitter, you know that's what I am. But I don't want to come off as being just another way for marketing to get in touch with a customer who might buy something.
Yeah,
and I want to
yeah.
be part of a community. I want to provide value to the community and not be somebody that, oh, here's a link, click on it and give us your email and phone number and you'll quickly hear from our organization that's going to qualify you as a lead or not.
Well, my immediate thought, Calvin, goes to the sort of angle of the immediacy of the transaction. And I feel when you get involved in lead generation, particularly through social, it can get a bit too transactional where, okay, you're talking to somebody. Are they going to buy our products? And most of the time, maybe not at all. But it's more actually like a play on virality. Like, who do they talk to and how do they spread our message? And that sort of implicit marketing that is encompassed very well by the principles of inbound marketing. And I hope the more inbound marketing takes over, the better that will get.
Yeah, but you still can't. If you fill your social streams only with inbound messages and not people, going back to Amy's circles or whatever, I like the fishing on a coral reef metaphor, Matt. If you only do inbound marketing without the people, it's awful cold. I called it neutron bomb mm-hmm. marketing the other day. The no people there. I don't know, Calvin. I think there's a balance. My group is doing a lot more with demand gen and campaigns, and it's working out really nicely so far. We're finding out we're a very cost-effective way of generating campaigns. But explicitly from my boss, one of our very explicit goals is we are protecting the channels from overuse, from people stomping all over them.
Wow, you've officially become the coral reef protector. How happy are you right now, John?
Yeah, we have little badges and everything.
Nice. Do you wear hats?
Hats are coming soon. So that's a challenge I think all of us are facing, but I think what we do is still valuable. Is there any way that you go out and try to prove? All of us sitting around our microphones right now really believe that the demand gen stuff, yes, we can help with that, and that's valuable. But, man, no one else is doing this ideation, thought leadership, 70% of the buying cycle, consideration kind of stuff.
It's the unicorn layer,
yeah,
you know?
The unicorn layer.
It is, and I've described it as that
kind
gross.
Of – sounds gross. Anyway, go ahead.
It's right between the, you know.
The bacon and the waffle converged network with
exactly.
unicorn meat
exactly.
in between.
We've used this example before too, but it is that meta content. It's that word of mouth marketing that in consumer sales, Amazon and Zappos and any other number of sites or reputable review sites cover. And that in these long cycle sales and complex worlds, you actually have to have it's not enough just to have this starred review. It's the layer of blogs. It's that blog layer that forms the crust just outside PR messaging and And before a salesperson comes and pitches you, or you're talking to an engineer with, you know, other questions from the company. And I do believe in it. And Calvin, to your point, I think there is something worth protecting there. I think you have to broker a truce of some sort and understand that demand gen can work with some forms of social media. And again, I think it's why I go back always to those three circles. And again, I love your metaphor too, John, about the coral reef. But I break it into circles so people can understand. You could go fishing maybe on the platforms in a way that you don't with the people on the content side. The influence marketing is a slightly different thing than demand gen added to a particular social asset that exists on one of your platforms, where you really are fishing kind of blind.
Yeah, and I'm you know, I kind of consider myself to be a content engine. I mean, I'm certainly a little bit of a community organizer too because of the connections I've got, but I keep telling my manager and my people at HP, I mean, I'm a content engine, and you don't want to distract me from being on that track. And, you know, one of the things I've started doing are these things called, I call them HP Chalk Talks, and they're basically whiteboards with some football music in the background. And, you know, huddle up, let me give you some information. And these have been really wildly popular. And what, you know, to me, the first connection I would want to make to demand gen is, if you guys on the demand gen team want something that really kind of introduces somebody to a product or a concept or a solution, take these videos and use them as your as a CTA. But I want to be careful of, you know, at the bottom of every blog post, putting a link that, you know, drives somebody into a page where they have to put in their information to get any more information.
Yeah, that's deadly. The funny thing is, content matters, right? And the quality of the content matters. We were just looking at some stats today, and we were seeing that different assets perform wildly differently in terms of form fill out and lead gen. But the problem is that's because some of the content was interesting and some of it was really boring. But as a marketer, sometimes you're so clinical, you're just looking at your numbers and going, oh, this channel worked and this channel didn't. But the content sucked. So
yeah, and I see that even like with, I mentioned these Chalk Talks I do. I mean, they're 4 or 5 minute videos. And I see some that, you know, have 10,000 views, and I've got a few others that have 100. And it's like, okay, the content sucked. Let's face it, it might be a nice format and it's a great way to communicate, but if the content sucks, the content really is king. And I mean, we were talking about that 10 years ago and it's still true.
Well, hey, so Calvin, we have been bumping up against issues of org structure here for a while now in this conversation. You are out in one of the business units. You now are in the storage business unit. All of us have kind of a central social media organization and then different product lines. And you seem like you're like get your hands dirty on the ground, you know, kind of guy. How do you see yourself working with central social media and HP? Obviously, I mean, monstrously large, right? And
yep,
very varied. You've got consumer, you've got enterprise, you've got all devices, you've got, you know, all sorts of considerations. The corporate side has to hold all that in their head. So how do you work with them, and what do you think is the right kind of roles for the two sides of this relationship?
So have we said that I work for a big technology company? Because let's keep this anonymous from here forward, okay?
Okay, HP Storage. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, I've actually I don't want to come off as though I think I know more than the people in a corporate organization that, you know, maybe have, you know, some experience with social media, and there's maybe some that have even more, but, you know, I've seen some of the, some of who these folks are, and some of them are, you know, they look like they're 25 years old, and I'm guessing they probably don't have more than a few years of social media experience. And now they're setting policy that, or
watch it,
programs.
Calvin. Watch,
yeah,
it.
I'm being very careful here. And they're setting policies and programs.
They've been using MySpace since they were 13. Anyway.
Exactly. And they're doing things that what I've actually tried to do is go to them and say, look, you know, I'm not trying to come off as some braggadocio, you know, big honcho that you got to listen to everything I say, but I think I got a lot to offer. And I'm trying to like actually work with those folks and say, look, you don't have a bunch of, you don't have very many enterprise business people on that team that are focused on enterprise. A lot of what's the people on that corporate team actually come from the consumer business or the, you know, the what's PPS and HP, which is, I don't even know what it stands for. See, there you go. I don't know them very well either.
Printers,
it's the printer, PCs and systems or whatever it is. So yeah, so it's PCs and printers basically combined into one organization. And my sense is some of those folks don't really get how B2B social marketing is different than B2C. And I have continually offered to be a sounding board for them. And I've had some success with some people, and other people kind of probably, you know, I won't judge why they don't contact me, but it's probably because they're, you know, working 70 hours a week too, and they don't have time to get on the phone and get my opinion on everything they do that might have an impact on B2B. But, you know, I think it's coming along. As you said, it's a behemoth of an organization at times. You know, when things change, I can't keep up with who everybody is. But there's definitely some core people that I stay very close to, and people that we work with to, say, bring the bloggers to HP Discover, kind of define what our bloggers lounge is going to be. And I tend to get a lot of ability to have, you know, influence on that, who the bloggers are that we bring. So it's a good relationship. I would like to have more influence because I think I have a lot of insight that I could share, but I'm not going to go, you know, bowling over their doors to, you know, bust in and give my opinion. At least not yet.
Have we turned corporate social media into one of our villains yet, Geek Whispers? I don't think we have.
I'm pretty sure. Well, I think it's been kind of spliced into pieces. we're getting pretty close.
Yeah, I'm not sure which in the Star Wars universe. We'll have to figure
we're
out.
We're running
where
out of characters, yeah.
It's Jabba. But it's clearly Jabba.
I think they are Jabba the Hutt. I think you're right.
They're all
I'm done. This is what I do. Metaphors.
That was a great imitation back there. And I hope folks heard it. You got to rewind this about 10 seconds and hear it again.
So, I mean, they are often, sometimes I think, like, just like the wrong people are drawn into HR, the wrong people are drawn into social media, and they have a tendency to be concerned about compliance and control and things like that. And my group, I'm the central social media group, and our group is concerned with that, but boy, some people are wound pretty tight, and I don't see them adding much value as people are out in the field.
Yeah,
and in particular, I noticed the sense of risk aversion that, at least in some enterprise companies that I've been associated with in the past, there is a sense of being averse to risk in their social media strategy, which I feel fundamentally is not going to give you the bang for the buck that you get by investing in social. I think social media is inherently risky in the same way that – and when you do it right, it is – in the same way that unicorns are inherently going to cause friction. And I think that's part of the advantage of it, that it gets attention through friction, through tension, as opposed to just being a perfect, seamless process that fits into an organization.
Matt, for a guy that's probably 20 years younger from me, you have a lot of insight. That's the nail on the head. I think a lot of the corporate structure is often put in place to reduce that risk. In my job, I view it as maybe getting close to the line and creating some controversy, obviously not crossing the line, because I think I do understand the difference between you know, a lawyer calling me and telling me that I've done something wrong. But I think that's really where this comes from. That's where it's a natural, I think, tension that will always exist. And I won't say that it's good or bad. It is what it is.
Yeah, I'm going to be as bold as to say it's good. And I think it's funny to point out that, Calvin, that's exactly how we met, right? Is by maybe skirting that line and crossing it a little, or depending on your angle on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's the story?
Matt, you start, and maybe what we can do is like do this, like you say five words and then I'll say five words, and we'll end up with the whole story when we're done.
Okay.
The title of the story is how Calvin and Matt almost got fired.
In a long, long time ago, and a long, long time ago, in an acronym that was three letters long, starting with E, I was a systems engineer that was getting kind of bored, and also getting started in social media and seeing that a lot of people found this delicate balance and they played it well, where they were skilled at work and also did more of the independent social media that blogged, that inspired others through their ideas, and that truly tried to hold a balanced opinion despite working for a vendor.
And that was entirely noble and not something I'd seen a lot of from other people. Although there are, actually, I should be careful of not saying that, because there's lots of guys like, in fact, some of them work for that e-company.
Yeah, there are plenty of people to tip hats at. I mean, there are great examples in the community that work for big companies,
absolutely,
do a great job, and then can hold their own opinion and focus on the tech. And I really hope to do that, too.
And so the kind of where we actually met is we were at HP trying to do something a little bit different. And the brainchild of a former colleague of mine, who now actually has been acquired, I think, again, he came to HP because he was acquired by HP, and now he's at Microsoft because he got acquired by Microsoft. Mark Farley had come up with this idea of doing a blogger reality contest. I mean, I think we were thinking a little bit of American Idol, but for bloggers. And so we wanted to get a set of kind of relatively new bloggers. Matt fit that very well, although I didn't bother to look at his details of who he was and who he worked for. And after we did the first round, which was basically we did a briefing and then said, go write a blog. I looked at Matt's blog and it was excellent. But then I kind of also saw that he worked for EMC, and it was was I not supposed to say that?
Oh, you're good. I think the cat's
okay.
Out of
I think so. I think most people know that, don't they?
And, no, you're good.
And I had an old crap moment because obviously, you know, my company and his former company are big competitors. And I thought if a well-placed senior executive vice president sees that we're doing this, my rear end could be grass, and, you know, use another a word that rhymes with grass. And so I immediately went to folks that were kind of had picked who these contestants were and said, I hate to say this, but I don't think Matt can be a part of this. And what I hadn't really heard for sure, Matt, because I don't think we actually talked about it directly with me, is I don't know what happened on your side. So what was happening on on your side of the fence?
Yeah, it was really interesting. So I was causing a little tension being in an engineering organization, getting very comfortable with Twitter and finding that community essence. I started a public blog after a lot of – I started internally, actually, with – some leaders at EMC like Chuck Hollis and Steve Todd really edging me on there. And that was going great. And then this came up and I'm like, all right, I have no other way to get to VMworld. I know I can pull an independent angle. Why not? Why can't it be me? So I wrote that blog post. It was on HP's converged infrastructure. It went public. I got called in by a manager and was kind of... I was asked, well, first of all, I was told to take down my whole blog, including that blog, and I said no. And then we got into the awkward conversation of, well, you can't blog about this. And I'm like, I can blog about things that are of interest to me. I have every right to. Am I not doing my job well enough? And he tried to make it about my job. It got awkward, is the long story short. And then it got down to this thing where they're like, he in particular started questioning whether or not I was sharing trade secrets with HP, and said he was going to bring me up to legal, and it would just be better if I, you know, got off social media and just kept my head down for a while.
But let's kind of reset the stage here. So
sure. Now,
this is a completely public contest. You were accepted into it, but I mean, it's not like it. So basically they were briefing you and you were writing posts about the thing and then voted or something, right?
Exactly. So just you're briefed on some HP technology, particularly around their converged infrastructure, and you were asked to write themes on it based on what they presented on, and whoever did the best, got the most votes,
you know,
got a free ticket.
I don't know, Amy, I almost buy it. I almost, this why
almost.
Not?
I'm keeping quiet, but I will tell the story at some point 10 years in the future. Let's just say we should have a sub-series called They Called and Asked Me to Take My Blog Down, because I've gotten the call too.
Well, okay. So, and then Calvin, we don't have to draw this out too long. So then on your side, you guys are at HP, you have an EMC guy in your program. I mean, what did you guys end up doing?
So I actually didn't pay a lot of attention who was brought into the program. We actually had another blogger who we said, hey, this was partly your idea, so why don't you pick who these guys are? So actually, I didn't know that Matt worked for EMC until I saw his first blog post. And it was actually a really good blog post. It was pretty, non-biased and a good evaluation of, of what we were doing at the time.
Calvin, you're also giving me a lot of credit because I also took the even ballsier approach of, I was briefed by HP. I worked at EMC. I figured I'd converge EMC's hyper-converged or converged infrastructure play versus HP's converged infrastructure play and kind of try to do an apples-to-apples comparison.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so, yeah, if I could make it any more obvious. No, I just couldn't. There's no way to make it more obvious.
So on my end, I actually never got a call from a manager. I never got anybody telling me, you know, you need to kick this guy out and or you're going to get fired. But it was actually me that kind of realized, hey, you know, this could be a really big problem if people see this. And I don't think there were enough people inside of HP that were paying attention to see it. And I think we basically kicked Matt out before anybody realized what had happened.
Well, there's more, and there's more. Just to finish the story on my side of the house, got questioned and challenged and threatened by my direct manager about my job, basically. The next day I got called into my director's office, and I was sitting there totally ready to be fired, and he just started laughing at me. He just, like, flat out, he laughed at me. He's like, you are ridiculous. It's like, he's like, this is actually pretty cool that you're doing this stuff. I don't know why you do the social media stuff. I think it's, I personally don't get it, but I see the value for our business, and I'm glad you did it. But boy, you could have done this a lot better. Like, you could have told me beforehand. You could have said you wanted to go to VMworld to me. I would have sent you, and I'm going to send you anyway. So just get out of this program. Let's switch which group you're in. And
oh wow. So actually this had a happy ending.
This had an amazing ending that it basically there are two things that happened. First of all, it was brought up all the way up to the president of my division.
You have a talent. You have like a special talent, Brander.
It escalated rather quickly. And then that's when I realized the true power of community investment, because I had gone about, while I didn't go about this very elegantly internally, I built a good surrounding of leaders. So I had the top blogging talent at EMC who knew me personally and had my back and used their bat phones and called right in and said, hey, you're good. You didn't. This wasn't the brightest move on earth, but it wasn't bad. You didn't do anything terrible. So they all had my back saying I was doing the right thing. More or less, or at least shouldn't be fired for it. And then my manager, thank goodness, his boss understood me a little bit better. So we just kind of shuffled things around, and I did something in a different group. And that's when I realized, actually, that maybe I should try social media instead for a bit, because the engineering team might be sick of me.
So I think the lesson here, if I were to put it in unicorn terminology, which you know I have to, is don't put your unicorns in pens. They will kick out.
You have to have free range unicorns.
No one puts unicorns in a corner.
And if we're going to try and bring it back to Star Wars, I only have one thing that I would say, and that would be, Matt, I am your father.
You got you started. You got to admit that.
Well, no, honestly, that was a foundational escapade, for lack of better terms.
Calvin big time is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Calvin,
I love the whole things I'll never do again. So my question to you, Calvin, is would you do this again? Would you change it? What was your lesson?
Well, the lesson was to pay more attention to kind of programs like this and not hand the keys of the car over to somebody who you think might make decisions that aren't going to get a bunch of people in hot water. When, you know, they don't really have skin in the game. It's not like they were going to get fired because they weren't working for HP. They were doing it on their own time and wanted to be a part of the program because it was partly their idea. So it's pay more attention to the details. And I tend to not be a detail person. And so paying attention to the details was certainly something. I would love to do something like this again and maybe even make it, you know, a little bit more interesting and something that draws more attention and gets a few more bloggers noticed and, you know, grows the community.
Yeah, I like that.
I would actually say, just to jump in, if we're talking to our practitioners out there, that I have, again, a story for another day, but I know of a story where, again, details matter, and somebody was about to do a blogger briefing on a topic of sensitivity and almost invited two competitors because they were using an old database and they weren't involved in the community. So I think to your point, Calvin, it is always wise to have maybe a program manager who has got that skill set, that hyper detail focus, you know, line by line, and somebody who's involved in the community. If they're not the same person, then make sure you've got those two skill sets present, because in the matter of people, it really does matter and the details matter.
Yeah, or else just if people who are independent bloggers don't go work for a competitor or other vendors, I mean, it would just make life easier for all of us.
Yeah, we'll put that request in. You can fill out that form and send it to corporate.
Yeah. And on the future unicorn side of the conversation, for those listening and wondering how to break out, sometimes I really appreciate that risk is inherent to this. And you got to stick to your guns a little. You got to know when to apologize and who to apologize to, which I certainly have done plenty. But also don't be scared of causing a little friction, because that risk comes with opportunity.
Nice, nice. My takeaway is maybe going back to the experience question. I was thinking about those first people that you invited to that blogger day, Calvin. I think I might be Facebook friends with all of them. And we're trying actually right now at my place to kind of make better databases of everybody and keep a little more current. And, you know, you need resources for that. But at this point, there's a week go by when somebody emails me. Somebody emailed me today and said, hey, do you have so-and-so's email address? And I'm like, I typed it into my email box, and lo and behold, yes, I had corresponded with that person, and I gave the PR guy the email address. Having somebody who's experienced and who has longevity in the position, as opposed to, you know, some kid you're going to rotate out every 6 months, actually makes a huge difference in this relationship building game.
Yeah, it definitely does, because, I mean, a lot of it, I mean, let's face it, it is about relationship building. And, you know, you can't do that with a new community manager. I don't know if I should use that word or not, but community organizer. I think you can't do that if that is changing all the time.
Yeah. Or let's just say it doesn't come for free or up front.
Yeah. Nor do I think you can hire it out or hand it to an intern easily. I'm sort of curious what you think about that, Calvin. We've had that discussion here before. For me, influence marketing and the core of it is not something that's easily passed off to an agency, for instance, even though we're all strapped for resources.
Yeah, so going back to PR, there are a lot of similarities of what we do with PR. And let's face it, I mean, I have not worked directly in PR, but I know a lot about what they do is about building relationship. And generally, that happens maybe a little bit with an agency, a PR agency, but at the end of the day, it comes with the company that the reporter wants to talk to. That's where the relationship is. And so I absolutely believe that it's not something you can hire out. There may be some administrative things like, you know, setting up a call that we're going to do with the bloggers, sending out the emails to invite them. But the relationship, at the end of the day, I think you as a representative of your company have to be the owner of that relationship you're going to have with all the unicorns and all the bloggers.
Amen. And maybe those people should be deputized under new verbiage so they can do it well in an influencer marketing fashion.
Oof. Amen. Hey, so Calvin, another question about the bloggers that you work with. Do you, out over time, have you found that people have more respect for them? Are people approaching you? See, you said the very first time you do more than just blogger days and things like that. But I like that as an organizing metaphor. That very first one you guys did, you had some extra time and you let some other people join in. And like with the VExperts, what I've noticed now after several years, the first couple of years I was saying, hey, would you like to brief the VExpert program? And everyone would be like, what? And now people are approaching me saying, I would really like to get in front of the VExperts. So you develop this channel and people realize it's a channel. All of us have done that over time. So are people now kind of knocking at the door to say, hey, you've got some important people at HP Discover. I would really like to talk to them.
Yeah. And actually something like HP Discover, I mean, it's almost like a knockdown, drag out fight because, you know, we end up with a 2.5-day event. We only do the briefings with the bloggers when our showroom floor is open because that's where the bloggers lounge is. And so we have pretty limited slots in terms of getting briefings and getting access to that and being able to talk to these guys when they're at an event like that is, you know, it's a real kind of interesting thing to watch all these businesses trying to grab the slots and get the slots. And now there's some moderation of that to make it fair so that, you know, me in storage, I don't end up with six and, you know, somebody on another part of the business gets none. Although that would be fine with me if that happened.
Depends on who's paying.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's part of it too, because I'm fortunate to have a business that really gets the social media part of it. And so I generally you know, without question, I'm the guy that always gets the biggest budget to bring the most people to these events. And, you know, the last one we did, I think there was 26 people and I brought 7 of them. And HP is a huge business. So, I mean, the fact that one guy in a business unit brought 7 people, I far and away brought more people than others. But yeah, it's always a kind of a interesting thing to kind of, you know, when other businesses know these people are going to be there, they all want access to them. The thing that I want to get more of, get going, because the program, while at an event like Discover is somewhat formal, what we don't really have is kind of like what you guys just talked about, like, you know, your VXpert program. Mm. I don't have a program like that where I've got people in storage coming to me and saying, hey, we got some cool news. Can we go talk to your advocates? Cause we got some cool stuff we want to talk about. I certainly know, you know, who a lot of those people would be that I would invite, but I don't have a formal program today to do that. And I think that's kind of the next go do for me.
That's super juicy. Before we go there, I just wanted to make one comment about, bringing the bloggers to the event or whatever. I think it's important for marketing people not to get too niche and specific, because I get people coming to me going, I talk to my agency and they can identify the top 10 experts in like left-handed, you know, throbnobbler nozzles. And, you know, that's what I want from you. Who are the throbnobble nozzles, you know, left-handed influencers? And I'm like, you know, they're all kind of virtualization IT people. Maybe some people are more into storage. Maybe some people more into desktop virtualization. But you know, they're all the same people. But they're like, oh, no, this is my program and my product. I need exactly these people. And I think it's important, one, to you know what the hell's going on, and they're just going off some keyword database that they cross-index with Clout. It's important to recognize that unicorn, we'll use the unicorn metaphor, that unicorns are usually pretty ambidextrous.
Yeah, and John, that's not a metaphor.
Okay. The unicorn label, anyway.
It's a European unicorn.
It's a fact.
Yeah. My main comment back to you is that I suspect that even though storage is bringing some of these people, that actually they're you know, triple threats. They're all position players.
I mean, already hit on that with like Chris Wall, who was just on the show, known for virtualization and networking, great influencer in the storage realm. And yeah, exactly, the sort of triple threat of our data infrastructure world.
Well, I'll give you the dirty secret. I'll give you the dirty secret that Chris actually knows this, but Chris wasn't one of the guys I brought, and I didn't bring him because I knew there were other groups that respect him for what he does around virtualization and cloud. And I knew I didn't have to use one of my 7 slots to bring Chris. I did tell him, if somebody doesn't invite you, I will get you there. But I kind of held back and said, let's see who puts Chris on their list. And then I used my budget to get other people. And Chris got on the list because I just know that he's high in demand.
Well, so let's go over to this ambassador influence. I hate the word ambassador. Have I ever said that?
No, I don't think you have, honestly.
It's ambassador program is kind of the term of art for these things because they are. Oh, no, these are influencer programs. I hate the word ambassador for your employees.
Anyway. I fight about the advocacy program. Yeah. I refuse to call it an advocacy program because I don't want people to think they have to come shill.
Yeah, but again, if you don't say advocacy, ambassador / advocate / influencer. I don't know.
Oh, God, guys. No, just I enjoy just saying advocacy and then watching people's jaws drop when somebody writes something that isn't perfectly like holding the corporate line of
an opinion. Like poking anthills, don't you?
You really do. Anthill kicker.
Like you cannot set up an expectation of an anyway. So Calvin, our consulting fee is like $50,000, but we'll give you the next 15 minutes for free.
This is very timely because I have to give my budget for my next fiscal quarter by tomorrow. So I made a note to myself, $50,000 for the three of you.
For the Geek Whisperers.
Oh, that'd be perfect. Yeah.
Do you guys take Amex? I just need to make sure you take Amex.
By tomorrow, I will take Amex and I will also buy a hearse and we'll put a Ghostbusters logo on it.
Okay.
So Calvin, I mean, so you cannot set up this thing. You cannot call it an advocacy program and then not. That's dangerous, Matt.
Why?
Because they're not all advocates. I have people in the VXperts who are not. They are bridges into, say, the Microsoft world, but they're not advocates. That actually has burned me a couple times.
Okay, well, that might have burned you, John, but let's ask Calvin. Calvin, in particular, you're saying you're feeling that pressure for a formalized program. So what's the angle? Like, what's your company feeling from a business perspective?
What are your business objectives?
Yeah, yeah, and you stole the words.
Would you say that Matt Brinder was an advocate for HP when he wrote that
That's neither here nor there.
I'm going to plead the fifth. I think it's kind of an interesting kind of thing going on. I think it started about 6 months ago where someone in management said, you know, Calvin's doing some great things here, but I'm seeing this EMC Select program or Elect program, and we don't have anything like that. And Cameron, it actually started with that kind of a comment where, thank you very much, Matt. You've kind of like come back as a nightmare yet again. And it's actually something I've been thinking about, you know, doing for a long time, but I've resisted the temptation because, I mean, there's not enough of me to carve out to do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my resistance to doing it is...
Corporate could help.
No, probably not. not in this case. I may need to go to them for some guidelines, but I'm guessing there's probably not... It's not really within HP. I don't mean that in a flip way that they can't. It's just not something they would do because they're more about kind of the corporate level things. Now, if we were going to create a corporate level program like this, I think I'd have to go to them. But
that would be like the Imperial Senate, though.
Yes, and that would be a scary prospect.
I've shared this in this podcast, and it's worked for me, but even if you're doing the same thing you do now, but you give it a name, has a mysterious corporate power of attracting budget.
Yeah, and totally it's funny that you said that, because my manager actually sent me kind of a, you know, his kind of high-level thoughts on this a few days ago. And the first thing on the list of creating a program like this was his suggestions at the five names for the program. It's like, really? We're going to start with naming what it is?
Yes.
And they're like,
yes,
all the details we should go to first.
Give it a name.
Yes.
No.
I have to tell you, stamp out the bad names. I had to geek source the name for our program, a little inside baseball. Yes. Because some of the ideas that came up initially were marketing ideas applied as opposed to geek ideas. So yes, yes, yes.
Hmm. Yeah, and that's actually what will be my goal. I mean, I've got a few people in mind that would be kind of the, you know, the inaugural beta run of the program if I get this going sometime soon. Where I've got some people in mind that would be the ground floor testing, and those are going to be the first questions I would ask is put the list of names in front of them and see what they think. So the inside pitch information definitely helps and confirms what I was thinking.
Print five stickers and lay them on the table and see which one people pick up, and you'll know.
Huh.
Well, that's a little brilliant. Evidence-based for me. But
and also I want to jump back to one thing. I know so you were talking about the federated approach and, like, how do you have a more kind of shop talk. We've got a hub-and-spoke model for the Cisco Champions program. So there are people with different disciplines. I know. Yeah, I agree. I think unicorns often are multidisciplinary, but we brought people in, and HP and VMware, EMC, a lot of these companies have multiple lines of business where it can get kind of confusing. We have people who specialize and they're on different tracks, but that we all get together and we're kind of feeling our way through the program this year. But I just want to say that kind of hub and spoke model can work if that's a concern or for anybody out there trying it. Again, I'm a newbie to this. I don't have the experience that John, you've got, and Matt, you've got another year plus under your belt, but it can work.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, it's a really cool project, Calvin. I mean, are there any particular business objective? Did we ask that question. I don't know if we let you answer it though.
I think part of it is, and this is going to be kind of a flaky answer of not being really necessarily a business objective, but it's really to formalize what we're already doing and really to create a regular approach to talking to some of these guys instead of waiting for the next HP Discover, which, you know, now will be June. And I'm probably not going to do a tech day between now and June. It's like really formalizing something so that we can get them information. And to me, what solidified that I've got to do this is just kind of a trivial, not so trivial example, but an example of what happened at HP Discover is as we were winding down HP Discover, one of the chief architects from HP 3PAR, which is a big company that we acquired about 3 years ago and is now really a huge and important part of our portfolio. One of the chief architects was sitting, or came into the blogger's lounge, and he sat down at a table. And I just kind of watched, and I laid back a little bit, and I could see that there were these like five kind of storage focused guys that just went foomp, and they went sat with him, and he started talking to them. And an hour later, I mean, they were just like, oh my gosh, that was like one of the most incredible conversations we've ever had.
Peak moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of knew that kind of stuff was possible. And I've seen that kind of happen before, but I've got to formalize a way to make that happen on a regular basis to get really smart guys like him. Cause I'm not smart enough to write the kind of content he could give them in an hour talking to him. So I need to get smart people like him connected with smart people like the bloggers so that they can get some better insights that are going to help them, give them content. And then at the end of the day, you know, hopefully it comes back and helps HP.
Yeah. Yeah. It is such a win-win-win thing. I mean, I think of it in terms of it's an award to the people. It's an enablement program because you give them tools and information they need to do their stuff. It is a peer-to-peer networking thing. People really love being put in a group where they can talk to each other and get access to each other. And it's a marketing program, right? Because you're giving them information too. So it works on just so many different levels. It's great.
Yeah. The one thing that you had definitely has me scared, John, is there's no way I can have a program as big as yours. I'm thinking my program is short term. I'm looking at, you know, 5, 10, 15 people. I there's no way I can manage a program with as many people as you guys have. And Matt, I know the program that you started was also pretty big. And
yeah, we started small. Yeah, but, you know, go back to one of our old podcast episodes if you haven't heard it, where we talked about the Citrix CDP, and that's been a program that stayed nice and light, like under 40 people, no matter how many years it's been around. So there are models for it. It's a little bit different style, but you could certainly start that way.
Oh, I had yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Oh, and I did definitely want to recommend that the best thing that we did starting EMC Elect was having this idea that no one wants to be the first one to the party. And by having kind of handpicked founders that were clearly like the caliber of people you want in the program and having them help iterate on the program before we went public with it, that was by far the best thing we did because we found out the original name was not very good for our audience and that what we were giving them wasn't exactly what they wanted, how they wanted it. So by the time we released it, it really was like we went from an alpha product to something that was really solid.
Nice. Yeah, actually, and all these programs, Calvin, have different knobs, right? And actually, I have a fifth knob that I forgot to mention, which is feedback. So like the CTP program, very heavy on feedback. It's small and they fly them in. Matt, the EMC Elect program, it's a little heavier on the marketing than VMware.
Sure, yeah, definitely. It's
VMware turned into more of an award, but as we grow it, and it is absolutely a goal of ours to grow it as a marketing channel, the award thing is, you know, it's not as exclusive anymore. So, you know, you balance all the knobs. I don't know how the champions thing is working out.
Yeah, Cisco Champions, we are a balance. Feedback has been really important because we are a big company. And I know in those cases, putting a face, humanizing the company has really empowered people. We're able to do outbound. So we're able to brief people, and that's been great for everybody involved. So, you know, part marketing, part that sort of community building that we're all very committed to, and part listening. And I always say it's education, amplification, and listening. And I think those three principles have driven us.
I really want to point out that talking about HP printers is on the mind. I really wanted to point out that Amy, one of the things I see most obviously when you bring the Cisco champions together is that they get a sense of exclusivity to your content and the way Cisco actually runs social. And I thought if I were still at EMC with EMC Elect, I would start setting up more of those sessions myself because it sounds like people really enjoy watching the sausage be made sometimes. And you've given them such a sense of behind the scenes that I've actually, the few Cisco champions I've hung out with since the program started have all been really impressed with that element of it. So just kudos to you. And what a cool model that, like, sometimes some of the best marketing for a company can be just telling them what you do and why you do it.
Yeah, I mean, just to be self-reflexive in some ways, that's why we're all here. You know, it's interesting. And Calvin, so great to have you on too, because one of the things I think is interesting to people is we all work for different companies and they compete at a certain level, but you don't have 10 of us at any company, even at a company this size. It's a small role. People are still figuring it out. It's a big role, I should say, but resourced small right now for all of us. And it's a way of getting together and, yeah, seeing how the sausage is made. And I'm kind of excited. I sort of feel like the more we talk about it, the more this circle expands, the more people, the more feedback we'll get. Other people say, hey, how do you set this program up? And I'm just kind of excited to see who else is in our unicorn herd.
Yeah. And for me, I mean, that the kind of the circle of friends that we have is kind of what drives me. I mean, as much as we do things, you know, in a cube or in a closed door in an office because you're creating content, to me, the most fun I have is going to an event, and VMworld actually ends up being one of my favorite just because there's just so many people at that event that I know, whether it's the blogger community or guys like you that, you know, bump into and we get to share ideas. I mean, to me, I wish we could do those kinds of events about every 2 weeks because that just energizes me so much to hang around with a bunch of smart people and, you know, leech from each other and do what we do.
Amen. Hey, Calvin, thank you once again for coming on the Geek Whisperers. Calvin, if people need to find you, obviously they can go to HP Storage Guy on Twitter. Any place else you'd like to direct them?
Yeah, my blog is, well, you can find it if you go to Twitter, but if you're not a Twitter person, you can find my blog at hp.com/storage/blog.
Awesome. Calvin, good luck with the new program. You're doing awesome work, and thank you so much for everything you've done for the community so far.
Hey, thanks a bunch, and hopefully we'll see at least a few of you at VMware PEX coming up here soon.
Absolutely. Well, that's been another week of the Geek Whisperers. We will see you next week.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
Java.
But it's really Java. I think they are Java the Hutt.
They're all done. This is what I do. Metaphors.